Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Tuesday, to get you through another crazy, wild, maddening day of news that we're going to figure out together live on the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. It is holiday season. It's time to travel, and you better make sure you don't get robbed. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Travel.
Now, some of you are leaving this week for vacation, maybe this weekend. For me, I'm leaving tomorrow night to go to London. Maybe I'll never come back again. We'll see how things go. Some people are going to leave next week. In a lot of cases, you've got friends and family members who are visiting you. And you are stuck. We are all mostly stuck with SeaTac. And when you get there, there is more of a chance than there have been in the past that you'll become the victim of baggage theft. Megan was just the victim. She spoke with Kara 7 TV.
Clothes, our shoes, our snorkel gear, souvenirs, presents. The saddest thing was both my little boys had little personalized blankets that their auntie had made for them in there.
I mean, it wasn't that high quality, let's be honest. But I mean, she had to deal with that. It sucks when you are the victim of theft. And when you're on vacation and you're victimized in that way, it feels even worse. Now, Kara 7 TV says the issue is very clearly getting worse. 2019, before the pandemic, there were 179 instances of baggage theft at SeaTac. After that, starting in 2021, it rose to 231. This year so far, it's 318. And that's the highest it's ever been. The highest before this year was back in 2008 when it was at 295. So things are trending in the wrong direction. One might say we have a surge of baggage theft over at SeaTac. Now, some of this, and really a lot of this, is being driven by two things. The homelessness crisis. Homelessness at SeaTac Airport is pretty apparent. There have been a lot of people who work at SeaTac or know people who work at SeaTac who've reached out to me to tell me about how the homeless are just kind of walking in. They're kind of taking things over. Sometimes they're going into the bathrooms and taking them over. Sometimes they're shooting up there. A lot of those folks are also stealing things. The other issue at play is just the general surge in crime. This is one of those crimes that you can get away with. That's the truth. It's an unfortunate reality, but this is not a violent crime, so you almost certainly won't even get booked. This is not a crime that is taken all that seriously, so you're probably not going to get charged either. And again, if you're in and out real quickly, you're not going to get caught because they don't have the staff from a police perspective, from the Port of Seattle police. They just don't have the staff in order to do anything here. But they are acknowledging, like Detective Darren Beam did, that it's happening a lot, especially this time of year.
Unfortunately, it does. With the holidays, people go, they bring gifts. We have over 1 million square feet in this airport alone.
So what can you do? They offer some realistic and some unrealistic pieces of advice. One thing I suppose you can do is, if you can get away with this, you don't give your bag to them. You don't actually check your bag. You do a carry-on, but that's not reasonable for everybody. Not a lot of people, not many people can do that, especially if you're traveling with kids. I generally am the kind of person who doesn't check my luggage, although it's not because of theft. It's because I just want to get out of the airport. But they also say you can put unique bag identifiers on your suitcases, so it's easier to find witnesses when the inevitable happens.
I've seen people that have pictures of kitty cats or palm trees, something that's ideally unique and immediately identifiable, and it potentially widens the amount of witnesses we have to a crime.
For me, I have, when I do check, I bring in my pink Pikachu and Barbie. They're in a relationship on the actual suitcase cover. Because then no one will want to steal it. Not just because it's very obvious that, you know, the burly homeless dude who's grabbing it doesn't actually own it, but they're embarrassed by it.
Is that what your suitcases actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
How many are you bringing on your trip?
Well, for my hair care products, I have one, but that's a carry-on.
And what time is your flight?
Hey, dummy. You understand that unless you're in London, you will not be stealing that bag. Now, when I come back...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
When I come back, maybe.
I'll steal your bags and use them for leverage.
TSA are my people. When I get there, they just fly me right through security, even at the border. I probably shouldn't have said
you
that.
You love flaunting your pre-check.
It's not that. They recognize me, and they don't even check my ID in any serious way. I would do, I would not do that. I would just do the AirTag thing. They're not that expensive. I think you can get four of them for like $30 or something. And as long as you have a phone, you're able to track where they. I mean, they're still going
to
steal your
thing.
You got
to be a certain IQ level to use that. Did you watch the whole package? The Lindsay Sheldon dancing around the airport. She was not very smart.
I love Lindsay, but I wouldn't go to her for tech advice.
Yeah,
is all I'm saying. Can we go the Costco route?
What do you mean?
What happens when you go into a Costco?
I'm elated. I love Costco.
What happens when you go in? What do they do?
They check your card.
Yeah. And when you come out, what do they do? You've
they
got
check
your
receipt.
Yeah. And what do? They look to see.
Yeah, that everything matches.
What happens when you check your bag? What do you get?
A receipt.
Yeah.
Or a tag
or
whatever.
A sticker. A tag that has your name and they put it. Why can't we just check that?
Seems like that would make too much sense, huh?
Why do they give you the tag only in case your luggage is lost? So why don't we go the Costco route and just have people checking? Even if they're not checking all the bags, just make it kind of random. Just that, I bet, would be a little bit of a disincentive for someone to steal.
It seems like it would be a good system.
Yeah, it just makes it maybe a little bit more difficult for someone to go through and steal your stuff. I just, you know, just throwing that out there. It doesn't seem all that. I'm charging for that if you ever use it. And if you use it without payment, obviously I'm going to sue you for all you're worth. And I would love to go after SeaTac. But it seems like that's a good idea.
I'm on board.
Yeah. Although
I don't ever check my bag, though.
Well, you don't travel anywhere. You're too poor. Push the button.
What's trending?
You caught me off
crime.
I went for the insult and then I immediately tried to move on so you wouldn't talk back. So we now know what led to the Ingram High School shooting, at least as determined by the prosecutors and police. It comes from court documents. And like we said yesterday, this has literally nothing to do with what the activists are asking for. None of what the activists are asking for would have played a role in anything having to do what led to the alleged murder of a 17-year-old kid by a 14-year-old. Now, they apparently were fighting in a bathroom because, according to the court documents, the boy who was shot, the victim, the 17-year-old, knew that the alleged shooter, the suspect, had brought a gun to school, and he basically said, yeah, I want that gun. That's what they fought over, a gun. Now, Como did a rundown of what happened. Again, this is all according to court documents. They say the 15-year-old who's accused as the accomplice, he got to the school, he went into the accused shooter's classroom, and he asked to speak with him at about 9 a.m. Minutes later, the accused shooter, who's 14 years old, asked to go to the bathroom. The teacher said, okay, yeah, you can go. He comes back a few minutes later, and then a short time goes by, and he says to the teacher again, hey, I need to go to the bathroom again. The teacher's like, no, you just went. Sit your backside down. And apparently, he didn't like that. That 14-year-old, according to the court documents, appeared agitated. He punched his hand into his fist, which there's something both scary but also weirdly adorable when a child does that. They can go either direction. They're either acting like a child or they're acting like an adult. And unfortunately, in this case, he allegedly acted like adults, because the teacher reported that this kid is going a little bit overboard in his reaction. So she said something, or he said something, to security at the school around 9:30. Two groups of teenagers then got into an argument in the bathroom, specifically over this gun, the gun that the accused shooter brought to the school. The 17-year-old boy who ended up getting shot, he was there as part of one of the groups. It says, in the midst of the chaos, the accused shooter thought his cell phone had been stolen. Following the fight, both groups left the bathroom. Court documents said the 17-year-old's group was seen laughing at the accused shooter's group, who appeared to be agitated and angry as they were leaving the bathroom. Once both groups were out of the bathroom in the high school hallway, they got into an altercation several minutes after second period had begun. That's when the 17-year-old told the accused shooter, you're not going to bust it. Now, apparently that means you're not going to shoot that gun. And the 14-year-old said to himself, yeah, I think I'm going to. According to the police, they say he walked past the 17-year-old, he pulled out his handgun, pulled it up from a backpack, and he shot the 17-year-old as he walked away. So this was some kind of, what, proof of your masculinity? 14-year-old says, basically, hey, you're not going to laugh at me. You challenged me. You said, I'm not going to shoot this gun. Okay, well, I'll show you. Those are the allegations. Now, apparently this was all captured on school security video, surveillance video. The 14-year-old continued to shoot the 17-year-old after he fell to the ground. Police say he was ultimately shot 5 times. So this is a kid, apparently, you don't laugh at. Because he's willing, I guess, to take out a what they're calling a Glock-style handgun and accusing him of shooting this 17-year-old victim to death. Now, prosecutors are requesting that this get transferred from juvenile to adult court. It automatically goes to juvenile because purely of the age of the suspect. You have to go into a courtroom. You got to get to a judge and say, no, we want to move this to adult court. And as Casey McNerthany of the King County Prosecutor's Office says, yeah, it seems pretty obvious why we want to do this. He spoke with Como.
If this continues in juvenile court, a high school student who's convicted would be out of custody at age 21. Some people say that's not enough. We want to preserve that option for a judge to hear both sides and the totality of the evidence and then make a decision of what jurisdiction is best.
Now, this kid, and he is a kid, should be tried as an adult. And I imagine there's going to be significant pushback from the anti-police, anti-jail, or jail abolitionist crowd. There are people who, regardless of the scenario, when a child is involved, whether it's a 17-year-old or a 14-year-old or a 4-year-old, that no matter the instance, this should never go in front of an adult court. It should never lead to any kind of meaningful jail time. They still hold that belief even when it is a quote-unquote child who's accused of murder. Those are the people who are in charge right now. I don't know who the judge is when it comes to making this decision, but I have to say, as much as I'm expecting this to go to adult court, and the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, they are taking this seriously, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if this was kept in juvenile court. We're told over and over and over again by Democrats in this state, and they've passed laws to implement this belief as a policy, that when we're talking about people who are, quote unquote, young youth, that their brains aren't fully formed. How many times, just in the last couple months, have we had to resentence criminals who, when they were younger, murdered people? Because the state Supreme Court came out and said, actually, you have to take into account, before you give someone a life sentence, you have to take into account their age. Their brains are not fully developed. Not everyone knows when they're 16 years old that it's wrong to rape and murder. That's their view. That is what they tell us. And then it gets in front of an activist judge who then gets to decide whether or not, when this incident happened, the person fully understood the consequences of their actions. Good luck trying to make an honest argument that in 2022, a 14-year-old who has a handgun, which it sounds like, I haven't seen this confirmed, but it sounds like it was stolen. And I don't know if he stole the gun or if it was just a stolen gun that he got in possession of. Good luck making the argument that in 2022, a kid doesn't realize that when you pull out a gun and then shoot someone 5 times, they didn't know the consequences. And yet we're supposed to believe that they don't, because their brains aren't fully established. By the way, brains not fully established to make adult decisions, and yet a 13-year-old can go ahead and have gender reassignment surgery or start the process at 13 without parental consent. In that case, their minds are fully developed. But when it comes to murder, I guess it's not. This is absurd. This is sad. Ultimately, this is sad. This is a 14-year-old. I guarantee you, once you get more information on his background, we're going to find that he comes from either a broken family or that there's some sort of gang involvement or gang influence here. Generally, 14-year-olds don't go ahead and find guns. Generally, when they find said gun, they don't shoot someone to death. Something happened in this kid's life. Is he forever on the wrong path? No. I hope he gets on the right path. In jail. This is someone who belongs in jail. This is someone who we cannot afford to go easy on. He's already shown an interest, allegedly, in killing people. He's actually gone through with it if the allegations are true. And as much as he's 14 years old and he's got a long life ahead of him, a lot of that should be spent behind bars. Because that 17-year-old also had a long life ahead of him. And he's not going to get to enjoy it. His family and friends won't get to enjoy it with him because of the actions, allegedly, of this 14-year-old. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? LGBTQIAADFHZ++.
Rather than focus on winning the World Cup, which starts next week, the U.S. men's national team decided to redesign its crest because they wanted to virtue signal. They wanted to take a position. They wanted to make a point about the LGBTQIA++ smiley face emoji community. And I suppose I'd rather them be in support of the community rather than against. I don't really need you to virtue signal on the world stage. They're playing in Qatar, a country that only got the World Cup due to bribery. The country has a bunch of laws that are anti-gay, but they also have a whole bunch of laws that are anti-Jewish or policies and beliefs, anti-woman. But the U.S. men's national team decided to change their crest. It's no longer the colors of red, white, and blue. The crest now has the stripe portion of the crest will be in rainbow colors because they support the gay community. Here's Sean Johnson, who's their goalkeeper. Is he going to be the starting goalkeeper? Probably not. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's a sign of our values and what we represent as a men's national team in U.S. soccer. And we're a group that believes in inclusivity. Mm-hmm. And we'll continue to project that message going forward.
They believe in inclusivity. How many gay players do they have? Any idea?
Is it zero?
It's zero. How many trans players do they have?
Zero.
What? But I thought that they were inclusive. Are you to tell me that you went in and you picked the very best of the best and not a single person was gay or transgender? Wow, that's weird. You're such an inclusive club. You stand for the LGBTQAI++ community. What about Two-Spirit? Any of them? Any Two-Spirit? Did we check with Jordan Morris? I don't think he's Two-Spirit. Oh, it's weird. And by the way, what about the Jewish support? Why can't you show your solidarity with the Jewish community? Did you know that textbooks in schools in Qatar teach kids just dramatically anti-Semitic positions and anti-Semitic beliefs? Did you know that women barely have any rights there? So what about the female community? Why is it that you stood up just for the gay community? Because it's cool and hip to stand for the LGBTQ community right now. It's viewed as getting you some extra points. You earn some extra social currency when you go ahead and do that. Head coach Greg Berhalter.
You know, when we are on the world stage and we are in a venue like Qatar, it's important to bring awareness to these issues.
Just real quickly, and I'll let you finish. Is it more important to bring awareness to these issues or is it more important to win? Because I don't hear a whole lot of we're going to win. And in fairness, U.S. men's national team, God bless them, they're not going to win the World Cup. I hope they go very far. I'll be secretly cheering them on at a watch party in London when they're playing England. So I'm not going to be showing my support
openly.
You're so cool. Because it's not that I'm cool. It's going to get beat up if I show any support for the U.S. men's national team. But can we also talk about winning? Why is it on you to make a social point? I don't care about your social point. I don't care about a social issue where you stand on any issue. I honestly don't. If this was really important to you, you know what you could do? You could choose not to participate. That would certainly be brave. That would be selfless. If the team said, you know what this country stands for is disturbing and I want nothing to do with it. And they said, we're not going to play. That at least would be bold. It might not be the right move. I don't know if people would respect it. Some people probably would. They would say, look, you know what? You're giving up a lot. You're sacrificing a lot. And you're doing it for a cause that you believe in. That might mean something. But simply putting an image on your jersey, what do you think that does? Guess what? I already know that you're all about the LGBTQ community. You want to know why? Because you tell us that every single day. We know this already. We know this from every single player. We also know that they stand for Black Lives Matter. We got it. So you're not changing anything. You're doing this purely because you want the points. You want some extra credit. I'm not giving you extra credit when you do things just for the extra credit.
And that's what Be the Change is about. You know, it's not just stateside that we want to bring attention to social issues. It's also abroad. And, you know, we recognize that Qatar has made strides and there has been a ton of progress. But there's still some work to do. And it's just about Be the Change basically represents everyone's individual opportunity to make change and to have change start with them.
What's that? I'm getting breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. Qatar just – is this – oh, wow. They just announced they now accept the LGBTQ community. It's no longer illegal to be gay. And they specifically cited Greg Berhalter's decision to change the crest – on the U.S. men's national team. Wow. That's pretty significant.
Is that really?
Yeah, I just got it.
That's huge news.
I just read it on the Twitter. I read it on Twitter, and it's by a verified account, so it must be a legitimate person. It's definitely not. Well, he only has 11 followers. No, he's got it. It's still a blue check mark. They wouldn't have given him a blue check mark otherwise. So that's significant. Never mind. I take back everything that I said. They're really making a difference. They're really moving things along in Qatar. I've never been more proud to be a U.S. men's national team player. And as a gay person, I'm also, oh my God, I'm just, wow. I'm just in awe. Thank you, Greg. If not for the heterosexual men of the U.S. men's national team, and they all identify as male, by the way, I see it on their email signatures, he, him. If not for them fighting for me, I don't know what would happen. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Speaking of fighting, you should never fight the IRS alone. They are increasing the number of officers in Washington State. Don't try to take them on yourself, so contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be on Fox News at night this evening at 9:25. Tomorrow morning at 7:50, I'll be on Varney & Company on Fox Business. If you're not able to watch the appearances live, well, shame on you. How dare you have a life? But you can head on over to our social media channels, all of them. We'll have the videos up. Also, youtube.com/JasonRants. YouTube.com/JasonRants. Show friend Andy Biggs, congressman from Arizona. Earlier today, he decided to challenge Kevin McCarthy to the speakership. And he explained why to Newsmax.
It's going
to
be tough. I mean, Kevin has raised a lot of money and done a lot of things. But this is not just about Kevin. I think it's about institutional direction and trajectory. And that's where we're going to see if we have enough people who agree that we need to change the trajectory of this place and open it up so where people can actually represent their constituency in a more open and transparent manner.
Fair enough. The vote was today. So how exactly did it go? Well, we don't need... No, it's... We don't really need this. I don't know why... Why I don't... The vote already at like 11:30.
You want to keep rolling the drums?
Well, how are your arms not tired?
I work out.
Oh my God, it's still going. No, it's not that. It's not that dramatic. We already know what happened.
What?
This is not.
You said
news.
Add drum roll.
No, I didn't say add drum roll. I just
said.
You did. No, I didn't. You made it think. It just. It's not that big of a deal. No, I'm not ready now. Well, why didn't you? Oh my God, he didn't win.
He didn't win.
No, we knew that at 11:30. The vote was early this morning.
Oh.
Kevin McCarthy won 188-31. God bless Andy Biggs, though. He decided to do this out of principle, which I understand. Here's the thing. Just because he wins the nomination doesn't mean that this is all over, that the drama is gone. In fact, it's going to get considerably more dramatic. You have to get 218 votes. You have to get 218 votes in order to be the speaker. Right now, he doesn't have that. Now, he has 188. That means Democrats are going to have to vote for him, right? Losing 31 is very, very serious. That means you're going to have people on the Democrat side either having to vote for you or deciding to just throw you under the bus and cause a whole lot of problems for the Republicans, a whole lot of chaos. This is significant. As of now, we've got 217 House members on the right. We're going to get at least 218. That's inevitable. That will happen. But let's say you get to 218, which is the bare minimum for the majority. Let's say you get to 219, 220. Well, that's still a lot of votes that you just lost. And so between now and the vote, you're going to have to talk with those 31 and convince them to vote for you. And how will he do that? He's going to make some good offers. Hey, I heard you wanted to get on this committee. You're so sick and tired of being on a committee about congressional ethics. There's no such thing as congressional ethics. We'll move you away from that. We'll put you on something more important, like ways and means. That's what's going to happen. And believe me, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to use their no vote as leverage. Matt Gaetz, for example, said this on his podcast.
I have spoken with many Republicans in Congress and many who will join our ranks soon. None are actually inspired by Kevin McCarthy, though many feel financially beholden to him because he is the LeBron James of special interest fundraising.
I don't know.
In this
what
last
that means.
Cycle, Kevin McCarthy, his team, they raised $500 million in campaign money. That buys a lot of friends. Or at a minimum, rents them.
Okay, you know, stick to Congress instead of being a podcast host. But he's pointing out something that is going to be really, really dramatic over the course of the next few weeks. It really is. Because if you truly have people, and Matt Gaetz sounds like he just really loathes the guy, meaning he's not going to be willing to vote for him if he gets a better committee assignment or whatever it happens to be. If you have enough people like that, you will sink. You will sink Kevin McCarthy. Because I can see Democrats choosing to throw the Republican Party into chaos. And then we'll end up getting someone else. Now, ultimately, I have no skin in this game. I don't dislike Kevin McCarthy. I don't have a reason to root for him either. I think he's fine, I guess. I'm partial to Jim Jordan. He's the one I secretly want to rise to power. He didn't step up. Andy Biggs did. I like Andy Biggs, but I like our friend Jim Jordan just a little bit more. On the Senate side, we now know things are going to get really, really, really serious because Rick Scott, also a show friend, been on the show a few times, including last week, he's challenging Mitch McConnell for the minority leader role. And we kind of knew that this was happening. There were lots of rumors as early as whenever I was at CPAC. I can't even remember. That was the last time I talked to him. A few months ago, there were rumors going that he wanted to challenge Mitch McConnell, in this case, for the minority leader position. Obviously, he had hoped it would be the majority, but it's not. And it's going to be interesting to see where senators fall. We know that there is growing discontent with Mitch McConnell, similar to the discontent with Kevin McCarthy in the House. Will it ultimately be enough votes? I don't know. I don't know. I think it's safe to say after the audio we played yesterday, Ted Cruz will be a no for Mitch McConnell. And I think you've got some senators who have been kind of wishy-washy. But at the same time, Mitch has been around for a very long time. He's someone who does command a lot of power that people are loyal to. We'll see how it goes. I do know that Chad Pergram today, after Mitch McConnell and some other senators participated in a press conference, they were asked very directly a question to which literally no one wanted to answer.
Do you all support Leader McConnell as leader, to return as leader?
All right, so it's time to go. Thank you.
No one wanted to answer. Oh, this one's going to be fun. That's going to be dramatic as well. Speaking of drama, what's happening at 6 o'clock tonight? Oh, yes, that whole big announcement. Donald Trump will be announcing he is running for president. At least that's what everyone believes is going to happen. I think he's led everyone to believe that it's going to happen. He's going to make that announcement at a speech in Mar-a-Lago. I'm assuming it will be well-produced. They have a tendency, and given his background, it makes sense, to really lean into some of the drama, to make sure that it's TV-friendly, camera-friendly. It's going to be a big to-do. I just wish he wouldn't to-do it. Does that make sense? I wanted to do the talk to-do twice. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Very good.
I don't want him to do it. Not today. Every single ounce of energy has to go towards Georgia. Every single ounce of energy. And by announcing his presidency today, he is going to take all of the focus away from the race in Georgia. He's going to take the attention from the media, as well as some of the activists on the ground. He's going to take it completely away from Georgia when we've got voting starting a week from Monday. Now, will it be 24/7 Trump coverage for the next week or two or three or four? No. But I do think it allows some bad faith partisans who work as journalists, in air quotes, to frame the Herschel Walker race around Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has not traditionally done well in Georgia. He hasn't done well in Georgia. And Herschel Walker was a Trump pick who didn't win. They're going into a runoff, sure, but he still trailed Raphael Warnock. At a time when there were a lot more people who decided to step up and vote because of Brian Kemp. And it helped Herschel Walker down ticket. But clearly, given the amount of votes that Brian Kemp got versus what Herschel Walker got, and frankly, Stacey Abrams versus Raphael Warnock, it didn't help him enough to pull this one out. And I fear that Donald Trump announcing now is just going to really make it difficult for Republicans to win in the Senate. Now, does it matter in the grand scheme of things as far as the amount of power that Republicans versus Democrats would have in a 50-50? No, because if it was 50-50, we get what we currently have now, which is Kamala Harris, who breaks the tie. And it really comes down to, at 50-50, whether or not Kristen Sinema, senator from Arizona, or Jim Manchin from West Virginia, whether or not they're going to go with the extremes of the left and their own party, or if they will continue to play spoiler and vote with Republicans on some of these key issues like maintaining the filibuster. And if you have a 51-49 split, well, guess what? Now you have to worry about hopefully keeping one of them, but you can't lose one of them. Before, when it was 50-50, you can maybe lose one and still feel like you can maybe convince someone. It just, the math gets a lot more difficult. It gets a lot more difficult. And when it comes to those votes, where we just need the majority, man, I would much prefer to have it 50-50. I would much prefer to have it 50-50. But on top of that, there's also the question as to whether or not Donald Trump and his star, whether or not it's fading. I think this comes after Ron DeSantis had a huge night in Florida. He was a huge winner. He was arguably the biggest winner of election night from either side. He was the big winner. Florida has gotten even more conservative. It's gotten redder. And in large part, it's due to Ron DeSantis. And even for the people who don't believe it's due to Ron DeSantis, the perception nationwide is that it's due to Ron DeSantis. So he's got a lot of that momentum and energy, which is why Britt Hume over at Fox News is saying Trump is losing some steam.
Well, he maintains real influence within the Republican Party. No two ways about that. But it has begun to fade. It started fading, really, I think, after his annex post-election in 2020. That a great many people who were with him perhaps up until then began to move away from him. And he never has really done anything to change that. He's continued to insist that the election was stolen from him, that he should be the real president and so on, so forth. And if you look at these election results, candidates who followed that line, who agreed with him about that, did not fare particularly well. They didn't all lose, but a lot of them did lose, and a lot of them lost in races that they could have won. So I think that both in terms of opinion and in terms of influence, his star has faded.
He's got some more, but at the end of the day, he's got very much a good point. However, I think it's missing something. There have undoubtedly been more voices on TV and on the radio and in print from the media class that have decided to go all in on Ron DeSantis and tell Donald Trump, stop, we can't have you run. They might like Donald Trump. They might have loved the presidency and his policies, but they don't think that he can win a race should he announce and run again. The problem is what's said on TV, what's said on the radio, what's said in print from the media class doesn't always match what people are saying, what the base is saying. And I think the base is still more with Trump than against him. They might have some concerns, and I do think that the base is trying to consider whether or not they would back Trump over DeSantis if they were to go head-to-head, or vice versa. But the more media voices that go out and attack Trump or tell him that he shouldn't run and his star is fading, the real truth is that ends up riling up the base for him, and they're going to support him in bigger ways than they otherwise would. So it's going to be a really interesting dynamic to see how things unfold. Or maybe he'll surprise us and at 6 o'clock again. I'm still saying money's on the return of Celebrity Apprentice. If you can find a celebrity who will go
so
on
cool.
And find a network that will take President Trump. He could do it on Fox or Fox Nation.
That would be great.
I would pay to see that. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. It's a Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. We are live on this Tuesday afternoon with some breaking news. Kevin Kiley just won his election in California's 3rd Congressional District, a Republican. officially bringing control of the House to the Republicans. Republicans now officially have control with at least 218 members of Congress represented by the Republican Party. This was inevitable. We knew it was going to happen. The question was when and what the margin will be. We still have, I believe it's 14 other races that are still too close to call, or at least still getting their votes counted. Things are remarkably slow, especially in California and, of course, in Alaska, where Sarah Palin is hoping to win her race for Congress against a Democrat. She's up against a number of other candidates as well because of the ranked choice voting, and it's taken a very, very long time. Things technically look good for her, but it's very difficult to predict when we're talking about the way that ranked choice voting is conducted. So the good news is Republicans now have 218 seats with 14 other races to go. The expectation has been about 219 or maybe 220, which, you know, gives a little bit more of a some margin for some malcontents, let's just call them. No, that's too mean. People who maybe have honest disagreements about the direction of the country, who might get in the way of some Republican policy within the Republican Party, mostly from the House Freedom Caucus. So that's the news. As we get more details coming in, we'll obviously bring them to you. I did want to talk about Donna. Is it DeErico? 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 She used to be on Baywatch, which for a whole host of reasons did not interest me. I just thought the writing was very, very poor. She is 54 years old now, and she has an Instagram account, as 54-year-olds have a tendency to do when they look like she does. She does not look like she's 54, or at least the photos she posted are so photoshopped in a very effective way. Right? Am I crazy? Does she look 54?
No, she doesn't look 54.
She looks like she's in her 30s. Yeah. Okay, early 40s. Yeah. She doesn't look 54 is my point. But she posted something so sad, but so ironic. In that she posted, is this considered a sexy photo?
Yeah.
To her, you know, people. Yeah. She's showing some, you know, some what you got.
Yeah.
And she posted, LA is a very lonely city filled with beautiful, lonely, temporary people. And I'm a human being just like everyone else. I want to love and be loved. And sometimes the company of a beautiful man can feel like a sort of love, can it? For a fleeting moment, I absorb it. I live in a state of abundance when it comes to men, so I'm never without a date if I don't want to be. But I mostly prefer to be alone. It's a heart-numbing thing when so many men desire you, but none love you. I realize that deliberate use of sex appeal makes it difficult for people to appreciate other things about you. I make my peace with it. Why would you then post a racy photo? You are now complaining that men simply want to have sex with you, but are not in love with you. So you are then photographing yourself in a sexy pose. Why would you do that? Isn't that just a conflicting message?
Well, it would be in the hopes that somebody would love her.
No. Did you listen to what she said?
She said
people are basic. She basically said, here's the TLDR version. I'm hot and people just want to have sex with me, but not love me. That sucks. Okay. That's what she said. Why then would you post a photo of you focused purely on your sex appeal? The only people who would thus be interested in you after seeing that photo are the exact kind of guys that you are saying don't want to commit to you. It does not make sense. Wait, so why would she do that?
You have an Instagram, right?
Yes.
You
and
follow
when
people
I post
on Instagram?
Photos like that on my own, and I did that the other day, a great bikini top and bottom. It was a little revealing, I'll be honest. And I actually got a lot of people interested afterwards. But yeah, go ahead.
People do it for attention.
Yes, normally. Go with me, because it feels like we're having a disconnect here. Oddly enough, like she's having a disconnect with her post. When you say you want someone to stop viewing you as a sex object, you probably should not post a photo of you as a sex object. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I feel bad for her
if
this is true.
Comment, put on a sweater.
I feel bad for her if this is true, if she truly feels this way. Because there is a disconnect with her message and her post. And maybe she's the actual problem. If you do not want to be seen purely as a sex object, stop presenting yourself purely as a sex object. It's really that simple. It truly is that simple. It's funny. There is this meme going around. It's really a screenshot of a Twitter user that's been shared an insane amount. I've seen it screenshotted now on Instagram. And it's a woman who, frankly, looks like a fake account. But she said how funny it is that people are mad at Pete Davidson because he constantly hooks up with hot women. And he's not particularly attractive to most people, or at least that's part of the issue with him. It's like, how did he get – he's hooking up with who? And the tweet said, we've been telling you this the entire time. It's not just about looks. We just want you to make us laugh and be goofy. Now, I find that a little bit hard to believe because I'm single and I'm hysterical. But there is this point of stop trying to focus on all the sexual stuff and the you know the traditionally sexy things and just be a good person. Maybe that's what she has to do from Baywatch, Donna Derrico. Maybe she's the one who just has to stop focusing on her own body and her boobs and just be a nice person and push that out. And then maybe someone will want to date her. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. If you want to ask me any of any relationship advice, I'll happily dispense it. 1-800-465-8770.